Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 474 for comics originally released on September 7th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC under the Vertigo imprint is Ever After from the Pages of Fables number 1. And that's from the Pages of Fables, it's Ever After number 1, not like this is just from the Pages of Fables number 1, although that would be kind of funny too. It's a really long title, and I'm pretty sure they're going to drop the From the Pages of Fables part before too long. Just once this establishes itself. This is written by Matthew Sturgis and Dave Justice. We've got Travis Moore on the art. And, you know, I was a big fan of Fables, so I've been pretty curious about this title.
What's this creative team's relationship to the original creators?
Matthew Sturgis, I think, did either Jack of Fables or one of the other kind of secondary titles.
The name sounded kind of familiar. I was thinking maybe it was that digital first, Wolf Among Us. Do you remember if he was involved in
yes,
that?
Yes, he also did that.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I think Travis Moore also did some of the art for that.
All right.
So they've done Fables stuff before, but not the Fables series proper.
Gotcha.
And, you know, going into this, I was thinking, you know, this could be more Fables greatness or not. You know, it could easily go either way. And I think this issue really did a good job kind of setting expectations pretty clearly early on, but this isn't the Fables we knew. It's something different. We even had kind of a passing of the baton scene with Bigby and Snow, with their son Connor kind of joining this new team, the Shadow Players, I guess is what they're called. And this title's kind of a bizarre mashup of like James Bond Fables set in a post-apocalyptic world. There's magic, there's zombies, there's all sorts of stuff. There are a couple of familiar characters, Bo Peep, Peter Piper, Connor Wolfe, but this has its own style and take to it versus Fables. And, you know, it was one of those things that the issue ended on, frankly, kind of a gory and gross page, but that also made for a really strong story beat and a good end of issue kind of a note, that really set up that the girl they're going after, not someone to mess with, you know, and it didn't feel gratuitous, out of place, whatever. I would have been just as happy without it. I think they could have established it without so much kind of on panel. But I felt this issue did a really good job setting up the main characters, the state of the world, why the story is starting now with, you know, Connor joining the team as kind of our entry ramp character. I thought it was a lot of fun. How did it work for you?
Yeah, not quite so well. I enjoyed the cameo by Snow and the Wolf, the characters that I remembered. that was kind of fun. I really enjoyed that, and them handing off their kid. And then it was kind of all over the place. I thought I didn't really engage with the main character, the kid, or his handlers, or the storyline. It was kind of boring for me, and didn't have that magic and that connection that I had when I read Fables and some of the other properties in that universe. It just didn't resonate with me.
I can understand a little of that, because there's an aspect of Fables and Jack of Fables and some of that other stuff that really played up that these are the basis for our fairy tales, those characters, and they get powers kind of because of that. That wasn't really addressed here. So, I mean, I get that, but what do you think it was here that didn't work for you?
I guess the story was, while going in, I didn't read the solicit. I didn't have any idea what it was besides living in that universe. Hmm. So I kind of had an expectation that it would be something along the lines of connected to the characters that I knew, and maybe a new story of theirs that was equally engaging as some of the other stories I had read. And it might get there. I just didn't feel like this one did a good job of, you know, setting the scene, laying out the what the plot was going to be, laying out the mystery in such a way that it engaged me and pulled me in.
That's fair, because there are a lot of questions as to why was the Shadow Team formed, what is their long-term mission, etc. But it sounds like you were expecting this to be more of a continuation of Fables.
At least some kind of, yeah, some kind of connection or inspiration that I could have latched onto. And maybe it's there and I just missed it.
No, I think if you were going with the expectation it was going to be more of the same, and from the title, Ever After, from the pages of Fables, I can see why you would think that. But what they're doing here isn't that, very clearly. It's more of a Fables the Next Generation.
It's definitely allowed to run its own course, right? And be its own thing. So that's cool, and I'm not going to hold that against it. It just, I guess, my expectations and my reading enjoyment didn't line up with this issue.
Well, I can understand, certainly, if I'd gone in thinking it was going to be more of Bigby, Snow, and the familiar characters, and I'm like, they barely showed up here. Who are these other characters? Why should I care? You know, I could see that. I at least respect that they clearly set up at the beginning of the story that this isn't what has gone before. This is something new and different.
Yeah.
It's just a question of if are you buying what they're selling kind of thing. For me, I was open to that. I was enjoying it for what it was. You know, to me, the scene with Bigby and Snow, you know, and their son getting, you know, joining this team reminded me of kind of like in Next Generation when you've got McCoy, you know, getting the tour of the new Enterprise from Data and stuff. And it's kind of, again, that passing of the baton. Kind of a, yes, we're connected to what has gone before. We're going to draw on that. We're going to leverage that, but we're different. Again, Bo Peep and some of the others, I think, actually did show up in Fables, but they were, you know, not the main characters.
Yeah.
And I think trying to do a Fables more of the same sort of a thing would have been a really risky gambit. Whereas here, playing in that universe, but having some time elapse and stuff, and the world being in a very different state, gives it some interesting story possibilities. But I can understand where you would be not liking this if it, again, didn't kind of match what you were expecting.
I think there's a lot of folks that, you know, really, really loved Fables.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to if, you know, it didn't go away that long ago, and has enough time passed to where you're just yearning for more. I'm curious about that. For me, you know, it just left. So it just feels like it just stopped. So it seems like, okay, are we going back to the well? What for? So quickly.
Almost a little too soon. I can see that.
Maybe. I maybe I'm just not ready for what they're offering.
Yeah, well, it comes down to not just what's on the page, but, you know, how was it pitched to you? What were you expecting? And what baggage you bring with you? And certainly, I think the point that Fables hasn't been gone all that long is a very valid one. I'm happy to see this back. It worked well for me. Again, I thought it was a fun blend of a couple of different genres. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this. But not every comic is for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
For me, though, this was an A-. I was very pleased with it, and I think it stands a chance of kind of, for at least part of the audience, recapturing some of that magic of Fables and moving forward with it.
Yeah, I'm at a C+. There's a little bit of stuff in here that I did enjoy, but for the most part, it really didn't capture anything for me. And I'd be curious if any of the listeners, I know there are bigger Fables fans on the forum than I am, so it might connect better with them, and love to hear their thoughts on that.
Yeah, same here. Is it what other people were looking for or not? You know, and definitely curious about that. And that's one of those, there is no kind of right or wrong answer. It's just, well, this is what I wanted to see them do in this universe, or maybe people didn't want to see them do anything in this universe. Yeah, interesting. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Daredevil number 11. We got Charles Soule writing, we got Ron Garney on art. And this is the second part of a story. Did you read the first part?
Yeah.
Okay. The first part had Daredevil and Blindspot, his protege, finding a painting that was made using the blood of like 112 missing people. Wow, that's a cheery concept.
Isn't that?
And then this issue reveals that the owner of the painting is starting to sell tickets to see it. I mean, classy guy. You gotta really respect the capitalist spirit he's got, if not the complete and utter lack of sympathy, ethics, and whatever else. But to make that guy's life even more miserable, it turns out that one of the victims, whose blood was used to make that painting, has some political clout. She's a speaker of the council. I don't know what the heck that position is or would mean in New York, but that's just my ignorance. Apparently, though, it's enough that she's able to pressure the district attorney's office to shut this thing down. And for a couple of reasons from past issues and stuff, Matt Murdock, who's working at the district attorney's office, a little bit of hot water, and is basically given the task of shutting that down.
Yeah, usually that position is second only to the mayor in power in cities like that.
Oh, okay. So it's just literally my ignorance then. I'm apparently not that much of a political aficionado to know these things.
Yeah.
Or there I just stay go. Out of trouble, one of the two.
I think that's a good option as well.
But yeah, it definitely sounded like she had some definite power and clout. So the setup for the story was interesting, and it then kind of warbled a little bit, in my opinion, in terms of where they went. Because when Murdock is going to see his boss, it takes about a page for him to knock on the door and go in. And a lot of that page is spent kind of recapping that with his senses, he can tell what people have done, what state they're in, but not what they're going to do. Which, of course, this is, actually, it's not a Civil War II tie-in, but it's bringing up a lot of things that are very apropos and timely, given the whole Civil War II stuff. With Ulysses and the future, you know, crime kind of problem, you know, and the whole importance of Inhumans and such, because we get some of that in here too. It just seemed like bringing some of that in felt a little odd. And I also couldn't place, is this story before or after Matt's in court for the events in The Accused? And I'm assuming after, because it was released a couple of weeks ago, but there's like no mention of it. And I'm like, well, that seems like something his boss might have brought up in some way, shape, or form. And then Matt isn't happy with getting this case, even though he's investigating the whole thing as Daredevil, and it seems like he should be for it. It's like, I was getting puzzled as to why Matt Murdock's mind was where it was at, why he was feeling some of the things he was feeling. And it's not that it didn't work, it just didn't feel right to me. And then we get this whole Inhuman connection that seemed just wildly out of the blue. Well, out of the blue, except for the fact that Marvel's really pushing Inhumans these days. And I'm like, is this even needed? The blood of 112 missing people, that's not enough. And I'm thinking, you know, you could actually base an entire ongoing procedural television show around this. Start with the pilot. It's like, oh, this painting's uncovered. You know, oh, there are all these things. You got the CSI stuff. Oh, it's another person's blood. Another. Oh, wow, it's up to 112. What happened to these people? And then for the remainder of the series, you go and investigate all 112. That's good for a good couple of years. So it's not like the story premise was lacking and they needed to throw some other stuff in. But they did. And it was interesting. It was good. It just, the story was going in different directions than I was expecting it to. And not, I mean, it was a little bit of, hey, that's cool. But there was a little of, why did they go there? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. When this originally relaunched, I did not like it. I did not like the first arc. I made it two or three issues in, maybe four, and said, I'm just going to sit this out for a while and check back in later because it just wasn't working for me at all. So I, you know, I'm checking back in at this arc, trying to see if, you know, it's the character that I really enjoyed reading with the Mark Waid, Chris Samnee run. And if they've been able to capture any semblance of that again. And there's, you know, some of the stuff that I hated the most is they're still playing this mysterious, you know, there's this mysterious reason why nobody knows, you know, his identity, even though he was outed. But we're not going to tell you, ha ha ha. And then Foggy and him are on the outs, and you know, he's kind of turned his back on the girlfriend, and it's taking it Murdock in a direction that I don't know. I don't think I'm going to like. I think it's going to go back to the really dark Daredevil run. I don't know if that was the 90s sometime in the 90s. I just blame everything on the 90s, you know.
It's Marvel. It's a safe bet.
Yeah, it's a safe bet. It got crappy in the 90s. And I just, you know, this is a title that, you know, had the highest of highs for 36 issues. And then through 48, when they moved it to San Francisco, it wasn't quite as good, but still a pretty solid title. And it's just not working at the same level for me anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things. I'm a little torn here because I thought we got a little bit of interesting legal stuff, a little bit of good characterization stuff.
Yeah.
The plot was moving along, and it did feel fuller than many comics these days. But
yeah,
I liked
the mystery. I thought the mystery was a good one, and that villain seems interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're muddying the waters with Blindspot. I don't like him. I think there's plenty of stories to be told with
Daredevil as a solo hero. He doesn't need
Daredevil as a solo hero. I don't think he needs that. I like the law practice. I mean, that worked for me. I don't like him as a prosecutor. I like him as a defender. These decisions, creative decisions, I don't like them. And you know, some of these all new, all different changes have worked for me. You know, I really like the female Thor. I think that's really working. Jane Foster's really working over there, and a few others I think are really working. But this one in particular, it's just striking the wrong notes. And you know, they're just treading water until it's reset button time. And I don't know what number that's going to be. You know, I haven't read far enough ahead in the solicits. Is that going to be an 18 or 24 when they push the button again and we get back to telling stories of characters that we know again?
Yeah, I don't know.
I know it's coming, and I just feel like we're just, well, let's just go down these roads and these little tangents for a while and play this string out and see where it goes. And I don't know if I want to go along the whole time.
It's kind of like you've got a really good band and they're just playing the wrong song. Because I think the storytelling, both in the writing and the art, is not problematic. I mean, Charles Soule can write. We know this.
I think it's more of you got a really great song, but it's just being butchered.
So good song, wrong band?
Good song, wrong band, yeah.
Interesting.
I think there's the elements of the characters are there. It's just being played wrong. And they're playing with the toys incorrectly. Give me the toys. Let me show you how to play with them.
Yeah, there's a bit of a mismatch between the property and the take they're doing. And again, the cramming in of almost, it's like this was almost thought it was supposed to be a Civil War II crossover and then wasn't for some reason. It's a little puzzling there.
I mean, yeah, it could easily be a better Civil War crossover than some of the other ones that have the banner.
Yeah.
That have barely touched on them.
There was one part here that it's just, if you were to roll the story forward a little bit in a fairly logical manner, we're at a crime scene, Murdoch just suddenly ducks out and is going up a stairwell, turning into Daredevil and going off being Daredevil. It would seem like the logical next thing for one or two of the people to do, you know, the other police officers and whatnot there, would be, geez, that's odd. We should make sure he's okay or something. You know, why is he just bailing like this? This is weird. Let's go see what's going on and then see the string of his clothes as he's, you know, gotten out of them to be Daredevil. It just, let's gloss over that. Let's not do that. It just, I don't know, seemed like a logical next step for one or two of these characters. But then it would have been a very different issue ending too.
Yeah. And the sequence you were talking about where, you know, he can hear everything and knows so much about them. And it reminded me of that, of the first issue when, you know, there was the guy being beaten in the room next to him, but he couldn't hear that happening. He was being tortured. And I'm like, well, see this, you're not consistent. You're not consistent with your character. You use him how you want to when you think of it. There's a scene, that's a nitpick, but there's a scene where he pays the bill with a crisp $10 bill that, you know, as I looked at it closely, doesn't seem to have any folds in it.
No.
And every Daredevil origin story or early arcs, you establish he has a series of folded bills because he's blind, so he can tell what denomination each bill is. And, you know, that's a very minor thing, but, you know, that it should have had a fold.
even though he can tell what bill it is because of his senses, he still folded it to maintain the cover identity.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's a little bit of a, it's a nitpick, but it's but also... But it gets
established by the better
it's a detail.
Creators. It gets established at some point and shown, and it's part of that. It makes it a richer character because of those touches. And I'd hate when those things get missed and I notice them. Maybe I just shouldn't notice them.
No, I think it's a great catch. And it goes towards your comment on the things happening for the convenience of the writer. Because it's not a big deal that it's the bill isn't folded there until you stop and think about it. And in the history of Daredevil and stuff, I mean, that's the guy is acting blind. Whether he really is or not, we could argue six ways to Sunday and stuff, although technically he is. If the writer's not paying attention to those details, or if the artist isn't, whomever, it subtly starts to detract from the sense of reality of the story. And when there are things that are being injected into the story, like, again, the Inhuman stuff in this issue, everything else you do that weakens the solidity and believability of the story, it hits a point where you would have otherwise had, it's not a bad story, and it starts to crumble a little bit. And this is one that I really could have given this a bit of a couple of different grades, actually. You know, because I enjoyed the issue. It's got some great stuff in it.
It's got some great stuff in it. It does.
It also has some weaknesses here and there. And you've pointed out a couple I hadn't thought of. So, I mean, to me, it's hovering somewhere in the general B area. But I'm going to go with the B minus. I just felt like they added more to the story than needed to be there. They didn't explain one or two things. Maybe I should have known who that you know, Speaker of the Council was or whatever. But, you know, I haven't had to know that for the last, I don't know, 30 or so years of Daredevil or any of the other comics I'm reading.
True.
Or legal dramas I'm watching or, you know. So it's just, I honestly, I'm also surprised it's not a Civil War II tie-in. It just felt like some of the stuff they were doing that was injected in there with his mindset of I can't tell the future and all the stuff with the Inhumans. The fact that it wasn't a crossover surprises me. It's not bad, but it's not something I would say jump on here. You'll love it.
Yeah. I'm going to be minus as well. And I think I've got another issue in me. I'd like to see a little bit more about our villain that was introduced, and the second murder was also very well staged and intriguing to me. And, you know, his art as murder is kind of a cool idea to explore. A lot of dead bodies piling up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to see this resolved and see where we go from there. But yeah, I think you're onto something with, you know, these murders are very innovative, and the art angle, it's kind of innovative, and I could see this working in a procedural. Lift some of these ideas and stick it in Criminal Minds or something.
Or just as the basis of its own procedural.
We don't really need any more of this.
Oh, we're going to get more anyways. It just seems like some of the other stuff they were tossing in there is cool, but wasn't needed and was starting to detract from the rest of this. Because I expect that the villain will, you know, at the end of the story get caught, because that tends to happen, just in general. We're probably not going to learn anything about the other 111 victims.
Yeah, and why can't this mystery be solved by he and Foggy and the DA girl that was his girlfriend? Why can't they be the ones to solve this mystery together? I mean, that'd be fun. That'd be more fun.
I took the whole lunch with Foggy as setting up the next kind of reset that you had mentioned.
Yeah, we haven't forgot that he exists. We haven't forgot that there are some things that you don't understand that we just... are we still in 8 months later, that whole relaunch?
We're in the second arc after it, yeah.
So we're still in that, and we haven't hit the all-new, all-different. Civil War II is a part of the 8 months later. Right?
I guess I.
Okay, it's so tough to keep up with these continuities.
Well, it's the same continuity. It's just they've never really explained how he hit the reset button on his identity. The first arc here was the Ten Fingers stuff. Now we're getting a good second arc or whatever. By the time that's done, the aftermath of Civil War II will have kicked in with whatever they're billing that as, And then the next sort of quote unquote season or whatever will have started. And, you know, at some point they'll basically rotate back to Daredevil saying, okay, we need to go spin that title a little bit and see where it lands. Oh, he's no longer a district attorney. He's back to being a defense lawyer. You know, maybe Foggy's dying again. Maybe he's not. Maybe the girlfriend's back. Maybe she's not. Maybe he goes to San Francisco for a while. Maybe he doesn't. You know, it's spinning plates is what it is. And it's not bad when it's really interesting stories. And for a lot of them, like what's going on with Captain America and a few of the others, I'm loving it. Thor, like you mentioned.
But yeah, I don't know which I prefer. I mean, Marvel just continues, you know, whatever happens, happens, and it's all part of the same thing. And it's just one big, long soap opera that we don't worry about all these twists and how they're explained away. Let's just move forward. Or where DC is, there's different eras where, well, that was a pre-Flashpoint, and this is a new 52 era, and this is a rebirth era, so these things are, that's why this thing happens this way, and this is different. I don't know. I mean, I was listening to the Mayo Report with you and Sam, and you guys, with your years and years of experience, were getting confused and mixing errors up yourself and calling New 52 Rebirth and Rebirth New 52. And I was like, what chance does John Q comic reader who went to Barnes & Noble, picked up a trade and said, oh, I'm going to go to that comic shop and try to figure out and pick up a new comic and go there. How are they going to continue to be readers? I don't know.
I think the casual reader has an advantage over the experienced reader because they've got less continuity to get confused with. But what that means is the more you read, the harder it is to keep reading.
that's terrible. But that is so spot on.
Yes.
That is so spot on that this is the only industry where the longer you've been doing it, the more frustrating it is.
I wouldn't say it's the only one. It's just a different style of it. You know, I think like the tobacco industry where the more you consume, the more it'll kill you. This isn't going to kill you, but it will frustrate the heck out of you. And it's gotten to the point where I can't keep the continuity straight. At one point I could, but they kept retelling stories, retelling the past and resetting things. It's like, hell, I don't know. And half the times things just fade away and go away, you know, and it's a big deal until it's forgotten 6 months later.
Well, you know, I'm reading a Green Arrow Rebirth. And I'm reading, and there's these plot lines with treachery and within the company, and you know, having his company. And I'm like, wait a minute, was this not just a year ago that we did this plot line?
Yeah.
Or was it two iterations ago that we might have done this? And was it within the New 52, or was it both before the New 52 and during the New 52 that we hit this plot, the same plot point, and we're dedicating multiple issues again to the same story?
It was definitely within the New 52 that they did the whole company getting stolen out from under him. It's like too soon.
Too soon to go back to those with the well. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with Daredevil, but I think it's part of the. Not yet it doesn't.
Next retooling, revectoring, whatever you want to call it.
When we go to San Francisco.
Or whatever. I think these comments may wind up applying to Daredevil within the year, within a year, let me put it that way, not necessarily the calendar year.
Yeah, this is probably a full arc, so
yeah,
5 issues or so we'll see.
Well, all of that having been said, shall we move on to our other book?
Oh, God, I guess.
I'll be honest, part of the reason I picked this is I thought there would be a lot of discussion around this. I'm not going to say I think there's a lot of discussion favorable around this. The title is Red One, number 3 from Image Comics. This, as one might guess from the fact it's in issue 3, is the third issue of the title.
First issue coming out March 2015.
Yeah, it had an issue in March. It had an issue in April of 2015. And then it had a hardcover in July of 2015.
Collecting that's what you do.
The two issues.
Yes. It was an expensive hardcover, if I recall.
It was a $16.99 hardcover compared to the $2.99 issues.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and the best part about this book is the letters column where they say, we're so glad you're back. I hope it was worth the wait or something like that. But it's really your fault that it took this long, dear reader, because of the overwhelming positive overwhelming positivity that you sent us over our first two issues. We had to make sure this third issue was just right. So we had to step up the quality just another notch. And that's why. So if you had really liked it so much, it would have come out, you know, earlier.
Yeah. If you had lower expectations, we'd have gotten this third issue sooner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to go actually right there instead of talk about the story, talk about that. It's like,
who are you?
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. For those of you who didn't read it, the first couple of issues, we have a Russian KGB operative / porn actress who is coming to America to take us over from the inside by becoming a female superhero and infiltrating our hearts and minds, winning us over, and therefore defeating the USA that way. That's pretty much what the first issue or two were about. And I think we're still in that vein, although it's tough to tell.
This, even though this issue came out 18 months later, picked up exactly where the previous issue left off, I believe. Like, within seconds, if it didn't even roll back a few seconds.
Maybe. We did not review this, though, right?
Great question. I don't remember. It's been so long.
I think we reviewed something that was similar in that the creator was obviously using English as a second language, and it was not their primary language. And it was very noticeable. But I don't know that it was this title. But this is—it's quite evident here.
It was not this title.
That there's some translations issues as well in this one, and I can't remember what that title was, but
might have been either Universe or whatever from Panel Syndicate.
No, it was way before that.
Oh, okay,
I'll have to look that up at some point. But yeah, the same problems are here. There are turns of phrase, that words that seem to be missing. Transitional phrases.
Ooh, hang on. I want to stop you right there. Words that seem to be missing.
Yes.
Do you have the print version?
In digital.
Okay.
Thank God I did not pay for this. This is a review copy.
There's the page. She is talking to her handler in Russia over the phone. It's just past the staple. That doesn't help you though.
Wait, it's way down there.
Yeah. So it's about 2/3 of the way through. Can you get to that page?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
This thing is.
Before the handler starts talking to the Russian guy, right?
It's, yes, right before she swings the hammer or is going to swing the hammer at the equipment. The page before that.
Okay.
That is filled with word balloons. Now, I'm not saying you're wrong that words are missing sometimes. I'm saying there wasn't room for more words on some of these panels.
True.
This is an insanely wordy comic, and I don't mind reading.
I see the page you're talking about. It's like 9 panels, 10 panels, and it is chock full.
Yeah.
And most of them are like that, and characters just talk the way people don't have never talked ever in the history of the world of talking.
Now, the writer is Javier Dorison, and Terry and Rachel Dodson are doing the art. But if I had to describe this to somebody who didn't know the Dodsons, I would say imagine Frank Cho's Liberty Meadows lead character there, if she were a Russian porn star spy. But then take the art, cover it with word balloons, just because it's a very wordy and tiny print in some of this stuff. Have it drawn on a little bit. Don't be succinct by any means. I mean, I'll be honest. I got a little ways through this and just started tuning out a little bit.
I would, if not contractually obligated by my 6-figure salary from Comic Book Page, I would have.
Keep in mind, all those figures are zeros.
I would have stopped. Before the halfway point, I think, and said, oh yeah, this is what I remember. This was terrible. I don't need to read anymore. And, not moved on but I plugged through and I took one for you, the listener. So you all owe me.
Well, I was curious how well this would do after such a long delay, after such a short run. And the fact that it picked up right on the heels of stuff. And I'm like, what was going on when we left this? I don't remember. And I actually did a little research to make sure that it seemed to pick up right where we had left off. And it's like, geez, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, ease me back into the story. And the back cover of this has kind of the one-page ad for this. We've got a nice shot of her, the Red One logo obscured by her. And the tagline is, "What happens when America's greatest superhero is a Russian spy?" Okay, technically she's a Russian spy. She's not really doing any spying.
No.
And she's not really a superhero. She's not really winning the hearts and minds of Americans or whatever. So it's a great pitch. It doesn't have a whole lot to do with this. And then for the plan to be, after this issue and the next, let's do book two, the hardcover. And I'm like, are they going to do like two issues a year or something like this? It's a very inventive business plan.
Mm-hmm.
But again, because of the wild sales success they had had previously.
And the passionate fan base that they've built.
Now, based on how they've described the sales, how would you think that did before?
I mean, how they described it or how I remember it doing?
How they describe it here, blaming us for the delay.
You would think it would at least be 40, 50,000 copies of this thing.
Yeah. It did
10% of that, maybe?
22,486 on the first issue, dropped about 28.9% to 15,987.
So that's still pretty solid. It's better than I remember it being. Yeah.
Number two hit rank 180. It's not bad.
No, better than
Velvet by a little bit, but not as good as Spawn. So, I mean, it's doing okay, but to make it seem like this wild success, this brilliant story that people are clamoring for, and I'm sure people are. It's got some good art. It's got some interesting things in here.
Oh, come on. Art's nice. I'll give you that, but...
It's certainly not
the interesting. What are the interesting things? Tell me. List them for me.
The font is very nice. I think the concept is great. I just wish it had shown up in the issue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was expecting something that, frankly, was a little bit more romantic comedy, slapstick kind of a humor, sort of something a little bit more, I don't say over the top or whatever, because... Mm-hmm. But something a little more lighthearted than we've got this serial killer or whatever.
Yes.
Is
there something about long delayed Image comic creators that subscribe to the, if you just don't acknowledge it on your intro page, everything will be fine. We had the same problem with, I think it was Nowhere Men that took off forever and wouldn't give us even a paragraph of, hey, here's what happened last time. And this gives you a paragraph that's kind of intro to the first issue, but I was really kind of hoping they would summarize what happened in a couple of those issues and who the major players were, because, like you said, it seems to pick up right where we left off, but the guy that goes off the dock or whatever, and that's affiliated with the church lady, I'm trying to...
The carpenter or whatever guy. Yeah.
I was like, why not stress? He seems to be pretty important. You know, the porn producer seems to be a pretty important character.
Well, I mean, the
church lady is an important character. It's been a year
and a half.
So maybe introduce us to the supporting characters and how they're supposed to be around Red One character, you know?
Let's go back to the carpenter or whatever his name is for a second. I think mentioning him in the inside front cover makes sense, given he's in the middle of trying to kill two people.
Yeah.
When the story picks back up, you know, they didn't give us a fighting chance to really get back into the swing of things. I think they did themselves a massive disservice there. And it's funny because, I mean, a fair amount kind of happens in this issue. But really, not much of it feels like it really matters. And I found it hilarious where the previous issue left off when they knew they were going to have a long break, maybe not this long, versus where this issue wound up, which is kind of it's a fun moment to end on, but it's not like it's a cliffhanger of any sort. That would have been a much cooler moment to have done begin a year and a half break on.
Yeah, they're recruiting extras for the porn film.
Yeah. Now, when I say that, I'm not asking, well, maybe I am asking them to take another year and a half off. It's crazy, the schedule on this.
She's all over the place. Her character is never the same in any set of pages throughout this. Characters that should be important come and go. She has this thing where when she gets stressed, she needs to have sex with somebody to relieve that stress or to get psyched up for the job at hand or to collect her thoughts or something. I don't know if that ever happened, but she talked about it for a while. If it did happen, I glossed over it, which is not like me. And there's so many inconsistencies in just her and the way she acts. Is she really a spy? Is she falling for America? Does this feel like 1977 to you at all?
No.
It's not. The only reason it's 77 is because they put 1977 in the beginning. It doesn't feel like that one iota. Now, the first issue felt a little closer to that. They at least kind of tried to put it in that era. But they didn't even try here. And there's absolutely no reason to read this. Even if you read the first two, I think you just count yourself lucky that you don't have to read this. It's not, there's no requirement. You don't have to podcast about it.
If you managed to go a year and a half without reading the next issue, and you did because they didn't publish it for that long,
You
can probably go another year and a half. And if you can go 3 years, you can go another 3 years. And if you can go 6 years, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that'll be at that. We'll get the omnibus that collects all three issues at that point.
God.
The hardcover deluxe omnibus. And this is an F and not a good comic. Really probably no reason for this thing to have been made, except for that passionate fan base that made them spend so much time on it.
I think an F is a little harsh.
Might be. That was 40 pages of my life that I'll never get back.
There is that. I'm going to go with a D plus. The bottom line is I lost interest while reading it. And again, it's not like it's a fundamentally flawed story. It just kind of took forever to tell and even longer to read. So I was a bit disappointed with some of that. And I'll be honest, I kind of knew going in that this was a
long shot.
It
was a long shot.
And not long shot, as in the X-Men Marvel character, because that would have been fun. But this was, it was not even a swing and a miss. This is something that they really, the whole, we were trying to live up to your expectations. Like, well, you didn't succeed.
Yeah, there's a podcast that's called How Did This Get Made that kind of picks B-movies and they watch them and they're like, how does this get made? You know, and that's the kind of the whole thrust of the podcast is just picking it apart and looking at the absurdity of it. Image, how did this get made? How did is it the Dotson name? That because of the Dotsons there?
I think that was a lot of it.
That had to be it. They probably accepted it sight unseen. I'm gonna hope that that Stevenson or whoever's in charge there now just said, okay, do what you want. That's fine. You can do three issues here over the next two and a half years. But it makes no sense. This should not have been greenlit from a script or from sample pages or from anything in it.
Didn't they say in the letter page they had the first three or four issues written before they solicited?
Yeah, that was a lie. That was a lie, just like the other thing was a lie. That, you know, the only reason it was delayed is because we went back to make it even better because you asked for it. You know,
oh, come on, you're not asking for it to be better?
Yeah, I guess their definition of better and my definition of bad better is
different. I'm not saying they made it better. I'm saying, aren't you asking for them to make it better?
True. It is my fault. Gosh, I have no one to blame. I give myself enough. I take it back.
As a reader, we have failed this book. No, I appreciate them trying. I think part of it is with Image, you know, with the Terry Dodson name, if you've got a halfway decent premise or whatever. And again, the pitch sounds good. I can see it getting greenlit on that. If it keeps going, though, that's just going to be a little surprising. I'm going to be very curious to see how this sells.
I have a veto the next time one of these comes out and you suggest it for an indie comic. I'm vetoing.
That's fair.
Play it right now.
You did it the once. That's all I'm asking. Neither of us gave it a great score. Again, a D plus. It's not often I go below the C level. It was disappointing. And again, I lost interest, and I'm a forgiving reader at times. Speaking of being a reader, not so much a forgiving one, I am slowly catching up on my reading.
Oh, chipping away at it, huh?
Chipping away. I read about another 50 comics this week. Of course, I got another 43, so I only made forward progress of a little bit. But I am finished with the week of August 3rd and 10th. Within arm's reach of getting the 17th, but then I've still got a couple of dozen from this week and the last two as well.
I've got about a 10 left from the 31st before I can hop onto the 7th hardcore.
Yeah, I've just had a couple other things kind of eating up some of my time. That'll go for probably another week or two. And then I'm hoping towards the end of the month or whatever. Of course, about another week or two is about the end of the month as we record this.
I did have to read Walking Dead, of course.
Have not gotten to that one yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some good stuff coming out. It's just there's so much of it. And again,
I'm curious about Walking Dead long term because it is so different now than the television show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the current comic, it is really hard to find any similarities or any characters that are still resemble each other. And I wonder, because it, you know, has such crossover appeal as a television show and such crossover appeal as a comic property, you know, that you see all these middle-aged housewives reading trade paperbacks and omnibi of the Walking Dead collections, and at some point they're going to catch up to the current area of where Kirkman's writing, and I'm just going to wonder, is it going to jive with him anymore because it's so different than the television show?
It may be that's what's helping it, that they've got the same kind of style, sensibility, and premise, but it's a different story, so they're not rereading what they've already watched.
It's true. It might be the world that we love and enjoy and not so much the characters, because you can't really get too attached to characters in a Kirkman book.
Yeah, I think it's more the mindset. Kirkman's got a really good tale of survival he's telling here. Of course, many don't survive, but you get the idea. And that sensibility, I imagine, is similar enough between the TV show and the comic. And if the specifics are different, that's fine. So, it's not like they're hurting for readers. I mean, it's a wildly successful comic, and
right, but it's not number one.
No, but I wouldn't expect a zombie title or a story set in a zombie world to necessarily be number one.
It has been number one. It's just not consistently number one.
It's only been number one because of crazy cover stunts.
Well, that could be said. Okay, we got to take Marvel off the list then.
It's not like Batman or some of the other stuff.
Marvel. Marvel is a crazy stunt cover type of company.
Absolutely. My point is, there are other things that have been at the top of the list because more merit based on content than on cover gimmicks. And Walking Dead is still within the top 5 or 10 ongoing titles.
It does crack the top 10 every once in a while, which is nice to see.
Well, and when it doesn't, you take out all of the Civil War or other kind of event and other shenanigan type stuff, and it's within that. So he's doing some good stuff, and I think people are responding to that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, you if you walk into a library's graphic novel section, I mean, there are every single volume, multiple copies of every single volume of that trade is in there, all the omnibus, all the hardcover, well represented in library collections across the country. And I would be curious if anybody tracks that, but I bet you know, they cycle through those. When they get torn up, they order another one and replace it. And I would be curious just what the quantities are that are in all those libraries across the country. I bet kind it's a sizable number.
If you took a snapshot or a census of the libraries of how many copies of the first Walking Dead trade and hardcover and or, you know, omnibus, whatever, out there, be fascinating to know. I've got to imagine there's a ton.
Yeah. And, you know, between, you know, they're the type of, they often add the, you know, multiple copies of Ms. Marvel and some of the more, and then some of the, you know, they'll carry Boom and different artier fare than just the big two. So there's a significant selection there. And I wonder who their rack jobber is. It's probably not Diamond. I wonder where they get their stuff from.
I don't know if we've got any listener that's more plugged into that. TJ might have some ideas on this, actually.
Yeah, and the guys over at Comics Alternative, there's a library there, isn't there?
Yeah, TJ and I have talked about doing a kind of a Comics in the Library episode and looping in some of the guys from Comics Alternative because, again, they've got a lot more knowledge there. I'd love to know roughly how many copies of that sort of a thing are in the libraries and what the checkout rate is.
I mean, not just public libraries, but college libraries, too, that maybe not as accessible by the public, you wouldn't think of, but they have extensive graphic novel sections.
Yeah, there's a huge readership out there, and it opens up comics to a segment of the audience that either can't afford or is wise enough not to to dump the kind of money that some of us do on comics.
Or is just trying it out. And then they fall in love with the genre and say, okay, now how do I get more of these? Oh, wait, I have to order them how many months in advance before I... And I don't know what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Where do I go to do this? Where are those shops at? Okay.
Again,
what if the guy, what if the guy's, what if the guy's grumpy?
What do you mean, what if? Often that happens.
What if Grumpy Joe's really not in a good mood for pull lists that day?
Grumpy Joe's Comics. I can see the sign now.
It's just so tough. Such so many barriers that we throw up in this industry. It's terrible.
But, I mean, some of them are starting to fall down with the digital comics and some other options and stuff.
True.
It's not perfect, but at least the stuff's
if you want it
there.
Digitally, you can find it. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to have the libraries and other things out there to where if you don't have a local comic store or you don't want to pay the money for it or whatever, you've got some options. So let's see. The next preview spotlight deadline is going to be October 8th. The teleconference will be the Saturday after that, the 15th. For the preview spotlight clips, first thing in the morning for the teleconference, it's 7 p.m. Central. All of this information is, of course, up on the website, so you can check there and stuff. We had a good turnout this time around for the preview spotlight. I'm looking again for another great turnout. A lot of people sent stuff in early because of the 3-day weekend for Labor Day. I really appreciated that. That helped a lot. We had a good discussion during the Labor Day weekend for the last teleconference. Again, hoping people can come in for the next one.
Have you crunched the August numbers as of 13th of September?
As of the 13th of September, I have not gotten the August numbers.
Okay, so it's this week.
Because of the Labor Day weekend, I guess, it was a week later than I was originally anticipating.
Which pushes your recording schedules back,
yep.
Probably, as well. Okay. Do you have any predictions? You got another DC sweep?
I hope DC does well. If it does as well as last month, where it took like 18 of the top 20... I'll be a little surprised. That having been said, there was not a Civil War issue, I believe, that came out. So we'll see. It's
is that still a thing? It's not over yet.
It's not over yet.
Oh my goodness!
Matter of fact, I was hearing the 8th issue was going to be delayed.
What? That's crazy. Marvel doesn't do that.
No. Well, actually, they do.
They do every single time.
That last issue, you know, 8 of 7.
8 of 7, then the epilogue. 8.1.
Something like that. And then it goes into the next event that won't be late and run long. Not that we're jaded readers. It's easy to get that way, though.
Yes. Yeah, but you're still plugged in. So that's cool. You enjoying it? I heard it was pretty good.
I'm liking it overall. It's just, I like the concept of Civil War 2. It's just, I'm getting a little tired of everything kind of involving Captain Marvel and Civil War 2. It's like, you know, she's really busy, I think, these days. She's in more comics than almost any other character ever has been.
I'll be glad when it's over. Get some of my comics back. Be nice.
I'll be glad when they get through with the event after event after event shenanigans and just allow each story to really build up its own momentum, tell some good stories, cross them over as need be or whatever. But having to do these kinds of things to prop up sales, it interrupts the flow of so many other books. It's hard for them to stabilize and get their own stories going.
Somebody likes it. I don't know if it's retailers or a significant portion of the readers, but somebody likes it because they continue to do it.
They do it because it sells.
So those are somebody then.
That's a lot of somebodies.
Yeah. Not this cat.
Well, enough other people are doing it to make up for you.
Mm-hmm. So. I'm an outsider.
Yeah, well, that happens. Over at DC, I think, actually. It's Outlaws right now. It's not Outsiders. Outsiders was a while back. I'm sorry.
That was the 80s, maybe?
Well, Batman and the Outsiders.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Outsiders dropped Batman, because they were too cool for him. I would love to see the sales around that point. Let's see, Batman and the Outsiders, boom, Outsiders half the sales, probably.
We don't need that, the thing of Batman on that.
Yeah, I can't imagine that happening these days. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think it'll do it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Doom Patrol number 1 from DC, Mockingbird number 7 from Marvel, and Resident Alien, the Man with No Name number 1 from Dark Horse.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.